Okay, if we can recommence, and certainly the groups that I sat in, there was some interesting discussion, so I will be very interested in the feedback that we get from the various groups. Just a little bit of administration before we move on to discussing the implementation support groups. Given that we are running half an hour ahead, we have arranged to have drinks at 5 o'clock, and that we will actually have dinner at 5:30, so that we can sit and eat and then be free to do whatever we wish later on. So that is the plan for this evening. So it's now time to understand a little bit more around the approach to implementation support groups and to provide any advice that we have in relation to those. And Henry and Kumar and Michael, or is it Michael, you're going to lead us off on this? You're going to lead us off.
Yep, I'll start okay. us off. Thank you. Yes, so I'll start off talking about sort of the introductory part of the implementation support groups and then hand over to Henry and Kumar to bring you up to date on some of the developments. So maybe just sort of starting off in terms of the background, clearly as we develop standards, we develop the standards to stand alone, to be sufficient in their own right. And I know that this was an important message from the Advisory Council back last October when we talked to you about the idea of implementation support groups. Now, the implementation support groups are intended to be another way in which we can go ahead, go about sort of supporting the implementation of standards. But of course, they're not the only way. So we have the Interpretations Committee, which discusses all issues that are brought to it by stakeholders. We also, as part of that, recognize that when looking at issues, we're not just concerned about diversity in practice that has already emerged, but we are concerned about the potential for diversity in practice to emerge in the future. And so having the ability to sort of respond in perhaps a quite a proactive way, we do see as being quite important and certainly reflected in the ISB's due process handbook. And in addition to the Interpretations Committee, we also, of course, have the Education Initiative, which provides educational guides to support the consistent implementation of the standards. Now, the consistent implementation of the standards is something that was a really key objective, part of the objectives given to the Foundation from the trustees when they completed their strategy review back in 2012. And one of the ways in which the board has responded to that is through setting up the Implementation Steering Committee, which I know we've spoken to you on some occasions in the past. Now, just as a reminder, the Implementation Steering Committee is an internal group within the ISB which just looks to ensure that we've got the right processes in place to ensure that we're dealing with implementation issues appropriately. And to improve the ISBs, make sure that we can improve the ISBs' intelligence so that we hear about the implementation issues on a timely basis. I should stress that this Implementation Steering Committee is not a technical committee. It does not deal with any technical matters. Now, coming out of that, and in limited cases, the ISB has thought that it would be a good idea to form a dedicated support implementation group to support particular standards. And certainly we spoke to you a little about this back in October of last year. Now, at the time of that, we had feedback from you identifying certain aspects that you thought would be important as we move forward with the use of implementation support groups. And I hope that you will recognise a number of the things that are featured on the slide here as being messages that we received from council members. The idea certainly is that they would only be used on an ad hoc basis according to need, and that whenever we do form these, they should have limited life. As I say, we've got the Interpretations Committee, which does respond to issues submitted to it. And so these implementation support groups would be of a temporary nature to bridge the gap between the initial publication of the standard and its first implementation. The implementation support groups, we think, should be made up of a range of stakeholders so that we are hearing about the practical issues that people are facing as they start to apply a particular standard. And the group itself should not actually issue any guidance. It should be as a forum in which issues could be raised and discussed. Equally, it wouldn't act as a filter. So the normal submission processes that we have for the Interpretations Committee would still apply so that the Interpretations Committee would still address issues that come to it that it feels are important and should be addressed. So the Council's advice so far, you told us in October last year that these groups should be used in limited cases only. They should be transparent, so meetings in public, have a limited life and not issue authoritative guidance. Prior to that, when we were talking to you about the newly formed Implementation Steering Committee, you encouraged the ISB to be an active listener, and I think the implementation support groups will be another channel in which we can make sure that we're doing that. Just wanted to touch on a couple of existing implementation support groups that we have and that you'll probably be aware of. There's the SME implementation group that has been involved in supporting, obviously, specifically the SME standard, and has been involved in issuing guidance, issuing Q&As, and also making recommendations to the ISB. We've had the valuation expert group, which was formed in order to help develop education material to support IFRS 13 on fair value measurement. Now, those two groups were quite different, so I just wanted to highlight those as being in contrast to the implementation support groups that we're talking to you about today. Those two were ones that were formed before we set up our implementation steering committee, so perhaps reflecting not only sort of different thinking at the time, but also, of course, different needs that we had for those two areas. At this point, I'd like to hand over to Henry to talk about the revenue group.
Thank you, Michael. So the revenue group, or to give its full name of Revenue Transition Resource Group, is the latest of these sort of implementation support groups. And I guess the context for this group is the fact that as we were drawing to the end of the process of issuing IFRS 15, the new revenue standard, we did get a lot of people commenting on the significance of the revenue standard, both in terms of its very broad scope and also for the sort of potential impact that it might have in particular industries, perhaps more so than others. And what we heard a lot of people saying was is that it really required the boards perhaps to go a little bit further than many other previous processes in terms of sort of supporting companies as they go through the process of implementing the new standard and transitioning to adopting it in 2017. I think one of the other clear messages that we heard from stakeholders was very much sort of saying they were looking to the boards to have some sort of a mechanism, if you like, to make sure that what was issued on issuance date was joint, and it's a joint standard, but was the mechanism to make sure that we could try to maintain that jointness and that we didn't sort of, that the FASB and the ISB did not diverge subsequently. So the stated aim of the group is to inform the ISB and the FASB about potential implementation issues that might arise on implementing the new revenue standard, IFRS 15. And the group will also sort of provide advice to the boards about what, if any, action they need to take in response to issues that are arising during implementation. And I think one very other important aspect of this group is the sort of the education aspect, because I think the group will provide stakeholders with the opportunity to learn about the new standard from others involved with implementation. And because the meetings are public, you know, they will be available to listen to on the website. People will be able to hear a group of experts talking about applying the standard. And so overall, you know, this should help ensure that the words are read the way that we would like them to be read, and also that we can try to maintain the idea of the single model in the revenue standard and, you know, do everything that we can to try to ensure that we don't sort of revert back to industry mindset. So the key point, and it's as Michael just sort of said, is that the group itself will not be issuing guidance. It's an advisory group for the board, and it has a limited life because we would envisage sort of winding this group up soon after the effective date of the standard. Little bit about the process. I mean, the process is that sort of stakeholders can submit issues. Any stakeholder can submit issues to the group. We have provided some guidelines on the website to try and manage expectations a little bit and make sure that people realize, you know, it's not about answering a very specific question. It's about thinking, when is there potential diversity? You know, you could read the words in different ways in the standard, and also think about the pervasiveness of the issue. In terms of the membership of the group, we've deliberately tried to keep it a small group. It has 20 members plus observers. And we announced the membership last week. It's up on the website. And you've probably seen that the heart of the membership is very much the preparers. I think we have 11 preparers and sort of 7 auditors and advisors. So that was very much deliberate choice about having the people who are having to implement the standard and the people who are perhaps closest to that process. And obviously, we've tried to get a good regional balance of representation, as well as industry balance, and obviously the balance between IFRS and US GAAP expertise. So that's just a little bit of the background to the revenue group.
Okay, so last but not the least, we are looking forward at the next level and considering setting up a group very similar along the lines of revenue for the impairment. It is a support group, not for the whole standard, but just for the impairment provisions. And a couple of reasons why we are looking at that specifically is, amongst the changes to financial instruments accounting, I think the impairment ones we consider are the most fundamental, which will have significant systems and understanding issues going forward, and will require a little bit of implementation support. Now, we have already received some requests and asking us about the groups. And like the revenue group, the idea is for this group to be a discussion forum where people can come and discuss the issues amongst the regulators and the firms and others who are the experts about how to implement this. And again, like revenue, it will not issue any authoritative guidance. We are planning to have the similar processes as with the revenue working group. What we plan to do is have web-based submissions, which will include some guidelines on what needs to be covered and what we are looking to do. And we are also expecting submissions by committee members and other members of the users group as well. The objective would be to avoid focusing on items that are, again, very specific, and very clearly we are not planning to focus on credit risk modeling. That's not the purpose of the group, but to look at the implementation of the standard and how it comes forward. We are obviously going to look at supporting this with the ISB staff and board members as we move along with this. Again, limited life. We are planning to look at the formation of the group once we issued the standard, and hopefully we should be able to taper it down by the time it becomes effective, or 2018, and with a very clear defined charter for what is the purpose of the group. So this is the idea going forward for the impairment support group, as we are calling it. And with that, I would like to open the floor for discussion on a couple of questions that we have put together, on which we are looking for your advice. on generally what do you think about the proposals for the support groups that we have put forward, specifically the impairment support group? And also, what advice can you provide on considering whether to form a dedicated support group for a particular standard, or in other cases that we have considered here? Yeah.
Thank you very much, Michael, Henry, and Kumar. We have there up on the screen the three questions that the team are seeking advice from the council. So I think that we can probably do them in any order that we so wish. So if anyone has any comments on any or all of those questions, I think they're very valid questions. Certainly appreciate your comments. Gavin. Sorry, Francoise, I'll come back to you.
So I guess I'll go to number two. And the answer is yes, I think we do agree with the formation of a impairment implementation support group. As you're aware, simply don't think it's feasible for the ISB to issue the standard and then walk away from it. I think that would be incredibly problematic for a number of reasons. So if leaving a void is not a possibility, I think the approach you've articulated makes a lot of sense. I mean, to the comments Henry made, really, I guess my thinking about it is what it will do is act as a focal point and reinforce understanding, education about what the board was trying to achieve in the impairment requirements of 9. So I would encourage the ISB to move ahead with formation of the group as rapidly as you can. Just purely from an implementation perspective, preparers will be getting on and making some pretty critical decisions sooner rather than later. So I would support number two.
Thanks, Gavin. Francoise?
I was not at the state of providing responses to questions, but I had two questions first, or maybe three, in fact. One question is, why isn't this considered for IFRS 9 as a whole? Why the? I mean, I can understand why there is a particular focus on impairment, but I can see the need for having support in the other areas of IFRS 9. The second question I have is, it's been said in the presentation that of course the interpretation committee would remain responsive to requests. I would like to know whether if I'm a preparer, for example, and I have my request and I put it to the interpretation committee, what will the interpretation committee do? Deal with the request or hand it out eventually to that group first? And if so, why? And the third question I have is, you have in the group what's been described as being experts, but basically, an implementation group is meant to help people understand how the requirements should apply once they've discovered. And why are the primary beneficiaries, meaning those who have to apply, audit and everything, the new standard, the people that are best placed to have a discussion forum, and not those who have participated in the standard, I mean, in elaborating the standard, in other words, why don't you have a dedicated group made out of board advisors or, I don't know, but those who have really a deep knowledge of what was intended when the requirements were set?
Thanks, Francoise. I think those are some good, interesting comments. And to me, they actually go to, if you like, the heart of why, what are the criteria around setting up these groups and what's the purpose? And perhaps it may be useful, Michael, for you as an overall comment around that and whether, if you like, we're learning in terms of this or you're affirming where you've got to.
We had experience with IFRS 11, where we had a number of issues come in, and we looked at those, first of all, sort of within the team, thought about sort of developing some education materials, and subsequently brought issues to the Interpretations Committee associated with that. I think what these implementation support groups, though, is bring another dimension, which I think could be very helpful indeed. Whenever we are at the Interpretations Committee, not at the staff level anyway, dealing with issues related to new standards, our natural first point is to turn to those who were involved in writing the standards and developing those. And that I see as being very much part of these implementation support groups already. you know, they would be involve members of staff who were involved in developing the standard, using the board advisors who helped to give particular input to those. So we're sort of drawing on that particular expertise that we would deal with, draw on in any case with the Interpretations Committee. I think the advantage that these groups have over what we've been doing so far is that it also draws in a broader community of those involved in applying the standards, those who are actually faced with applying it in practice, the preparers, as a group, and really sort of drawing on their experience as well as sort of the dynamic of a broader group of people sort of discussing an issue in public. Now, we've looked at models that have been used elsewhere, and certainly in Canada, the Canadian Accounting Standards Board has, since they adopted R4S and even sort of leading up to that, used a group which would draw together people from practice to sort of debate the sort of issues that they were dealing with in a public forum, and on occasion refer issues to the Interpretations Committee. And I think this is drawing on those sorts of practices and seeing the value in those and looking to see how we can bring sort of similar benefits to the issue here, but on a global basis.
I'll just make one comment in relation to the distinction between these working groups and IFRIC. I guess with IFRIC, the point is that there is it has been established that there is already diversity in practice. That's one of the filters for which an issue goes to IFRIC. As the point of these working groups is to preempt diversity in practice before it actually occurs by giving suitable clarifications. So to me, there's a sort of timing piece to this, and a preventative rather than fixing things after the event, if you like, which is an important distinction between the two committees. Groups.
Henry and Michael, Françoise is asking the questions, which implies that she doesn't necessarily understand exactly, if you like, the transparency as to how the process might work, that it may be useful, particularly, thinking about the Interpretations Committee, so that people are aware of the fact that thinking about this to start with, that they should go to the implementation group as opposed to the Interpretations Committee, so that people are aware that that's what they should be doing, and ensuring that everyone is fully familiar with, because these are new, as to how to deal with this, because obviously if people are not totally familiar, then there will be confusion. So perhaps that's one message just coming through from those comments. Lothar.
Thank you. I just have a question to understand this a little bit better. I mean, given the limited resources, obviously, of the ISB and the teams which can be formed, how much of a support is going to be possible, if a whole industry is applying a new standard? I mean, are you going to have some kind of a hotline which the accounting departments can call, or how is this going to work? How can I visualize this? Sorry.
No, I don't think we can be able to staff it to the level where we can do it like the accounting firm's hotlines, Lita. But the idea is the timeline as to when we complete the standard to the date of implementation. So hopefully, with the staff and others, with the completion of the project, we should be able to support the impairment support group and the other support groups that are coming into play. And also, the process is going to be web-based with criteria. It will need staff support, obviously, to filter, put it together to the group and write the papers. But what we are hoping is that we'll be able to use the commonality of the staff who have actually worked on the standard, including the board advisors who have been there before, to help with the group and make it operational.
Again, perhaps a process question that, you know, we can get something out to help the general understanding around that. Now, who did I have next on the list? Isabel.
Thank you. A couple of points. I guess what would have been useful, because of course here we're talking about standards that have either just come out or about to come, was, you know, how far you were considering, you know, maybe for leases at some point or for insurance, because that could have been helpful to see whether, because those are also rather big, you know, important standards. So that's one point, to be able to see, you know, if there's any criteria that could be applied in forming those groups. And that leads me on to transparency in terms of how these groups were constituted. I do take Hans's point from last time that it was difficult because this one was a converged standard and everything, but there was absolutely no public call for participation. You know, this is not, I would say, standard procedure, so, you know, people are sort of saying, hey, you know, this is really not transparent. And if you go a little bit further, if these, I'm going to call them animals, but these new animals are supposed, you know, if we're going to have maybe potentially four of these groups within the next, you know, 3 or 4 years, I'm thinking about the constitutional review and whether there would be a place in there to kind of define the criteria or specify the terms of the reference. And of course, I am aware that, you know, we will see as this goes, because to me, even reading whatever's available, I'm still unsure of how it's actually going to work, you know, given, you know, the IFRIC and the guidance, not guidance, and all the discussions that we've been having. So, you know, we'll see as it goes, but, you know, you might have at some point want to reflect as to how you're going to embed that, and obviously take a look at the issues that are going to be coming up and whether they were raised in the field work, the fatal flaw, the whatever, because I don't think this should be a substitute for procedures that, you know, before the standard gets published.
Some useful advice there. Thanks, Isabel. Jake.
Thank you. I just had a few observations in no particular order. At least I don't think there's any particular order. First, I think it slightly echoes something Isabel said there. I find it difficult to come to terms with the idea that it's going to produce anything that's particularly useful whilst being non-authoritative, and I'm not sure that everyone will view anything that it puts out in that way. There will be some, I think, who looks at whatever form of guidance it comes from a body that's constituted as part of the ISB and say that's authoritative in our view. So I think that's something where there will need to be an awful lot of education around stakeholders to say in what way can this information be used and be taken to be policing, if you like, of accounting standard implementation. I agree with the view of there being a limited life approach to this. I don't see this as being a body that should be there forever, but I don't think there should be a rule as to when there should be a cut-off. You may have a very large backlog of issues that you are still dealing with, and the idea that there's this impending deadline may make you rush the guidance that you're seeking to give or may make you not consider all of the issues that are put in front of the implementation group. Yeah. I think you did ask a question there around when should we consider setting up similar implementation groups, and my advice around that would be anything where there's anything that's particularly complex in nature, where you are seeking to actually change judgments around particular issues, or where judgments might be particularly complex. So I'm thinking very much around the when is a lease a service and similar sorts of judgments. Thank you.
Thanks, Jake. Surya.
Thank you. I just want to pick on a few points that we heard from Francois and Isabel, and maybe there's always a tension. If you make the body official, the responses you will get are what's already there in the published domain. And the challenge often is there's a load of people out there who are looking for some practical suggestions. So you could term the body as a pro bono body, in which case people would volunteer themselves and you avoid the problem of transparency, although you could have a criteria, you wouldn't obviously accept anybody who's not suitably qualified. And then you could disassociate yourself from the organization and say these are personal views. And then you can give people some real advice. I mean, I've had people, when I was a regulator, approach me and say, how do I choose a functional currency? I just run a mom-and-pop shop. And we had to do pro bono work around that.
Thank you. Something to ponder there. Linda.
Yeah, so I was listening to this conversation. It struck me that there is a need for people to discuss and get out ideas to understand where how to apply some of these standards. But I don't think there's a need to get the standards into an interpretation guidance. It's more to help people understand. So the question then becomes, is that the IASB's responsibility, or how do you effectively do that? Because you're not going to, it's every preparer around the globe is going to have this issue. So they go to their person on this committee in their country, or do we rely on the standard setters to bring this up in a regular forum, because they're now meeting three times or four times a year? I get the need. I'm just not sure it's the right solution.
Can I just add one thing coming out of some of the comments that have already been made? Very helpful, thoughtful comments. But just wanted to emphasize, and in particular about the revenue group, because some concern expressed about, you know, well, anything that the group issues will, of course, be seen as being authoritative. I think we really do envisage that the revenue group won't issue anything. Now, clearly, they're going to have a discussion, and that discussion will be available for anybody to listen to. But, you know, we're even conscious about the risk of managing minutes of the discussion and having to be careful with that. They, you know, just to stress, it's an advisory group. It allows the two boards to get close to where people are having difficulty with the wording and potentially diversity might arise. But ultimately, whether or not we do anything in terms of, you know, and doing something could be a variety of things. I mean, it could be a technical fix of the standard. It might be that some more educational material is required, or potentially, you know, that there's a little bit of application guidance that would be helpful. But obviously, the group will be providing input and advice to the boards, but ultimately, the boards will decide what, if anything, that they need to do, and then we'll carry out that action or use the interpretive group. So, you know, that I hope sort of perhaps provides a little bit more colour around the risk of the group itself issuing guidance and having some confusion about what the status of that guidance would be.
And I guess, Henry, there is a balance there, because bringing the group together and saying it's an advisory board and that people can listen to the discussion, well, if you've got to be up at midnight or whatever it is to listen to the discussion to get some guidance, is that really beneficial versus the risk of guidance? You know, it's just getting that balance right to say, to help people to implement, which is effectively, I think, what you're trying to say, well, forget the word guidance, is actually what is the best way, you know, and to do that. And I think that is key without making them into bureaucratic monsters, seeing as we were talking about animals. you know, so, yeah, just thinking that through. Where did I get to? Zinga.
Thanks. I am supportive of having these implementation groups. I don't think they should be used to replace the due diligence process that happens ahead of time, so during standard development. But I look at them as being able to help to provide clarity regarding what the objective of the standard is. And, you know, we were having our discussion early on judgment and use of judgment. These sorts of groups could actually help to support principles-based standards, because when you have a forum whereby people are able to discuss, you know, in the forum, you know, really what do we want to get out of it, that should help to provide some clarity. And it may, in turn, help with the whole IFRIC process, because usually when you have standards which are complex, there is a tendency to have quite a few more specific guidelines wanted by the stakeholders. But if you have more clarity over what we're trying to achieve through it, that may help to reduce that need and the tendency to want more specific guidance. So I think these sort of groups would be useful if used in the right way. I do agree with Isabel's point about, you know, there needs to be a lot of transparency about how these groups are established so that they can have credibility. And I do think, as I said, that they should not be a substitute for what happens ahead of the standard development. But it does beg the question, you know, about they may even be something like this is probably, you know, very, very effective for a development stage, in development stage of the process as well. Because as I mentioned, if you really use them to provide more clarity about what you're trying to achieve with the standard, and therefore support more principles-based accounting. This could also be an effective tool in the earlier stages as well, as opposed to post-development and before implementation. So that's something to be considered.
Okay, thank you. Begonia?
Thank you. Well, I understand that there is a need to help those that apply the standards in order to implement the standards in the proper way. But at the same time, I share some of the doubts that I have heard about the structure, the composition of these implementing groups, because I am not sure if this is formed by the staff members and board members or other stakeholders also participate in those groups. If this is the case, how this is structured? And then the other thing is, well, and related with that is, at what extent these implementing groups are, or the activities they do is close or related with the educational guidance that is also provided by the staff of the ISV, and or if this is more like a help desk that tries to help preparers to use the standard. So I'm not sure about which is the role. I think there is a need for that. I understand it. But which is the real role of that, and how are these groups created? So is that open to the public, or how is that?
Okay. I think there is a general theme coming through here, which I will try to sum up at the end. John, I think, was next on my list.
Thanks. I think two or three points. First of all, I think recognise these two groups are going to be very different, because one is on a converged standard and one isn't. And actually, as I understand it, the FASB made it clear they were going to do this anyway. We should definitely be part of it. The ISB should definitely be part of it. It's much better to have a converged group. I think that there is something to be said about presenting the impairment one, particularly as a pilot for an ISB world-only group. Because all of the points that have been made around the need for criteria, I agree with. And I think before these groups proliferate, and they will proliferate rapidly, because almost everybody's going to say, oh, we should have a group for this new standard, or we should not. You'll need to take the lessons from the impairment one and, I think, report back and actually with some criteria as to when you will and won't do it in future. And therefore actually be prepared to be quite brutal about, you know, sort of a self-assessment of how well did it work. And then I think the other one that's other point that's particular for impairment you need to take account of is it's pretty clear that the banking regulators are going to set up their own implementation group. So the interaction between your group and their group also needs to be thought through quite carefully.
Thanks, John. Roxanne, apologies, I think I missed you before.
Maybe one point which has been echoed already before, it's relating to the objective of this group and how these groups will interact with the implementation standing committee and then the role of the interpretation committee, which I think is very important because then the papers, these papers will be called, then they will be taken by some or by others as being more interpretative or not. And second point, in relation to the composition of this group, well, obviously I'm coming from the regulator's world, so I should say that I'm probably, as regulators are an important stakeholder, should be represented in this implementation group as well.
Okay, thank you. Gavin?
Yes, just following on to some extent from what John said, I mean, in the context of impairment, I think the reality is that unless the ISB does some initiative such as this, then actually there'll almost be an abdication of responsibility. And in the context of impairment, we could end up in a similar position, for example, to the US, where actually it's the prudential regulators that drive the application of impairment, as opposed to the standard setters owning the standards themselves. So I do think impairment, there is specific sort of a need for it. I personally don't really support the widespread use of these groups necessarily. So I would recommend the ISB is actually quite careful about setting up these groups for a whole bunch of reasons, but actually including the fact that they will be quite resource intensive for the ISB. And if you're not careful, you could get bogged down in just supporting these groups and doing nothing else. And I'd agree with the comments made by some other folk that actually if the effort put in up front to understanding the implementation challenges and operational challenges has been done appropriately, then there should be far less need for this sort of back-end approach once the standard's been issued. I also think expectation management will be crucial in defining whether or not these groups, are seen as being successful or effective or not. So I think clearly setting out the stall is absolutely essential. And I guess my other comment would be I don't think one size will fit all as well. So I actually think each particular circumstance the ISB should consider what might be the need. Can we play a role in filling that need or not? And actually the sort of approach I could see might well be different for different situations.
Thanks, Gavin. Danita.
My thoughts were pretty consistent with what John and Gavin said as well. I think that it's critically important that we have the group on revenue for the reasons that everyone has discussed already. But in my mind, at least, the jury is still out as to whether that makes sense on a broader scale. And I think that we really do need to do a critical postmortem, so to speak, after perhaps the revenue group and then the impairment group. And just to pick up on the points that John and Gavin made, I was going to also say that that one is particularly interesting because of the regulatory interaction or the interaction with the banking regulators, and I think that it's you really have to have them at the table, I would think, in this discussion. And so for those reasons, neither of those two may be a really good indication of how we can use these groups or how we should use these groups going forward, but I think we certainly need to analyze those in deciding how and whether to move forward.
Thank you. And I think the last comment, Patrick.
Thank you. I was just reacting to Gavin's comments. I think experience shows that the best, easiest way to ensure that we'll have converged application of new standards is the fact that we discussed implementation issues beforehand. And therefore, whenever a new standard is significantly changing the approach to what was done before, I think it's useful to have that type of implementation group Therefore, I agree that it's important to, based on experience with the first groups, to see what can be improved. But in principle, I think those groups are important, are useful, and I would very much support Roxana's comment on the fact that regulators are very willing to be part of it because they're very interested in the results.
I think that that has been some... Françoise.
Thank you. I started earlier with questions. I'm going maybe to give some indication of where we are. Basically, we think very strongly that the ISB is in its role in finalizing, in fact, its standard-setting effort in helping in the first implementation of a pervasive standard. So we support efforts which are being made in that area. We're wondering what are the best ways of doing so. When I hear referring to things being identified in advance of the publication, we are in fact very much in favor of that, but there is a limit to what to what can be achieved in advance of the publication without involving public at large. So I would want to point out to a consultation, in fact, that EFRAG has just launched last week, and that is seeking views on whether it would be a good idea to have the ISB relax its due process in the first times after publication of a new standard like this, to allow time when implementation has started to see, identify all those issues that need the final drafting to be refined or the misleading illustrative example to be removed or whatever. And that would not require, you know, 3 months of consultation and full deliberation process as would be done for any other amendment. So that there would be no impediment in the best responsiveness of the ISB in achieving the necessary changes. So we're consulting generally to seek views in Europe, but in that particular case, I think it would be interesting to have the views from a larger audience because it would be informative whether these concerns and these possibilities would be supported.
Thanks, Françoise. An interesting concept there, and certainly providing feedback in terms of where you get to with your consultation on that and maybe others to consider it might be useful because it's certainly something very different than has been done to date. So thank you all for, I think, very valuable feedback. I certainly think... Sorry, who am I missing? Oh, Hugh wants to say
just
something.
Just make one or two follow-up comments, perhaps. Just specifically in relation to impairment, and I think this is echoing somewhat what Gavin said. I mean, this is an area where there is intense regulatory interest, and it really would be an abdication of responsibility if we did nothing at all. We are aware that the in Basel they're setting up a working group. We are at that table as well. And we certainly hear suggestions to put regulatory representation on our working group. That's something we take very seriously. A number of people made comments about, seem to suggest or perhaps misunderstand what's happening. We won't be planning to issue, in general, these working groups authoritative guidance, and I think it's important to make that point. They are forums for clarifying what is in the standards. And I think just lastly, perhaps just to reflect on Françoise's point, I think we would be concerned if it became the case that standards were almost issued on a preliminary basis subject to further clarification or further correction. The timelines are already long on many of our standards, and we have to get the balance between getting standards out quickly and getting them as perfect as we can. I think the other aspect to that is that in some cases it takes some years for practice to emerge, and it will be very difficult to know when to draw the line if we issue standards on a preliminary basis.
Okay, thank you, Henry. And I am actually, John, is your card up again? No, I didn't think so. I think that has been valuable feedback. What I take out of that is that absolutely for impairment, Henry, as you emphasised passionately at the end, that everyone is in passionate agreement that that should be one. And I look at the slide six where you talked about the 2013 advice that you got from the council, and I think actually we're probably being pretty consistent with what we said there, that they're, you know, supportive of dedicated groups in limited cases only, and that would need to consider those, that it does need to be transparent in terms of whatever way. And Henry, you say there seems to be some misunderstanding. That may very well be the case, but arguably where does misunderstanding come from? You know, communication. So I guess it's making sure that there is the communication and the transparency around how these do operate, and why, and to set them up, and that very definitely a limited life and no authoritative guidance. So that was, I think, the guidance that, or the feedback that was given 6 months ago, 9 months ago. So I think consistent advice that generally is supportive. However, think very carefully before doing it, and do not let become bureaucratic just for the sake of it. And then some specific feedback that's come through. So I think that sums up of where we've got to, the advice there. So thank you very much. I think there has been a useful discussion, and certainly I think everyone around this room will be very interested to see what does happen in terms of your self-assessment on the revenue and the impairment ones. Thank you. So we have now given the...